Okay, around the bottom of Zion Amud Beis, we're continuing the next step of the Mishnah. Now, we've been trying to get her to confess. If she's guilty, we're trying to get her to confess. So now, what if she does confess? So the Mishnah said, Im Amra Tmeani, if she said she is Tmeya. So the wording of the Gemara is very unusual, but the meaning of the Mishnah is she writes a receipt for her ksuva and goes out. In other words, when a woman gets married, the husband writes her a ksuva. The ksuva means, in case I divorce you or in case I die, you will collect the ksuva. And that's though he will treat his wife with respect and not flippantly divorce her. So now, if she confesses that she had been unfaithful, so now what happens? So the Mishnah says, the wording is, she writes a receipt for her ksuva. So what does she do? She writes out, I hereby declare that because I was defiled, I'm not entitled to a ksuva. She hands it to the husband. The husband holds it, puts it in a safety deposit box, and she leaves the house and gets nothing. Okay, now, could you have thought of another option than what the Mishnah said to do?
For her?
Well, you know, she's not entitled to the ksuva. Because she was unfaithful, she's not entitled to the ksuva. So what did the Mishnah say? She writes a receipt that she is not entitled to get any ksuva now, and she leaves the house. Could you have thought of a simpler thing to do to make sure she doesn't come? What? She could give back the ksuva. How about something even simpler than that?
Rot to get.
Got the right idea, but even, what?
Rot to get.
No.
You have to give her, you have to pay her off.
Well, he has to write a get, but
rip it up.
Rip it up! Wouldn't that be the simplest thing? Her only way to collect is if she's got that document. The ksuva in her hand, always, the legal documents. You know, a woman can come, let's say a husband died 20 years ago, and she's got a ksuva in her hand, and now the children have grown, says, listen, your father owed me money from this ksuva, he never paid me. She's got it, it's got to get paid. So, what do we have? The Mishnah says she writes a receipt. She writes a receipt. Now, let's say you're the husband, okay? You're the husband, and your wife has violated this marriage. She has admitted that she's guilty. Well, certainly you're going to write her a get, but would you prefer, what's easier for you, Mr. Husband, to get a receipt or for the ksuva to be written up, ripped up?
No.
Why?
Because hold on to anything.
I don't have to hold on to anything. What if the husband would lose the receipt? So now he's got
to
get a safety deposit back, the deposit box downstairs to the CBC, pay $200 a year to make sure it doesn't get lost. If he would ever lose it, and if she'd ever find out, and who's to stop her, let's say 3 years from now, to just come with her ksuva and say, no, you have to pay me my ksuva. Let's say the husband dies. Let's say 3 years later, the husband dies. So the wife can come to the children when they want to inherit all their Yerusha. Says, listen, before you do anything, there's a ksuva over here. So, and they may not have known this whole, you know, or it could be 20 years later. It could be the children were very young when this whole incident happened. She comes 20 years later with a ksuva. And the father, who had ripped up, you know, he had this receipt, and he lost it. He never told the kids about the receipt. Isn't it a lot simpler just tear up the ksuva, and there's not nothing, anything to collect from? But the Mishnah does not say this.
No.
Now, What will the Gemara do with this? Gemara now is going to make the following application. Let's now take a case that has nothing to do with divorce. I lend you $100. Okay, so we write a document that says, I owe you $100. You owe me $100. I lend you $100, and I'm holding on to a document. I'm holding on to a you owe me. I don't know why they call it an IOU. It's a you owe me, right? You owe me $100, right? Now, let's say a month later, the guy pays me back. Okay, now what? Now there's a machlokes in the Gemara as to how do we conclude the issue. How do we conclude the issue?
Give him back the year.
The simplest way you think is very simple. Give him back, the lender gives back the borrower, the you owe me,
right.
And then the borrower rips it up.
Whatever
Or he holds on to it. He has proof that he's there. That's it. Here's another option. The other option is what? That the lender holds on to it and writes out a receipt that you paid me back. And now the borrower has the thing that shows here. It's a machlokas in the Gemara. It's a machlokas in the Gemara. Do you give back the you owe me? Or does the lender write out a receipt? And again, the same issue. It means now, is it that the borrower now for the rest of his life has to be worried to hold on to that receipt? Or does he not have to? It's a machlokas. So now, could this Mishnah be used to support one of these opinions in this machlokas?
For the ketubah.
Yes. Is the ketubah, that the woman has is no different than she's holding on to a you owe me. Now it's a little bit different because it's a you owe me only in case the husband dies or only in case the husband divorces me, but it's still a you owe me. Now that you owe me is worth, it's money. Yeah, people can, the husband could sell someone the rights to collect it just like a lender can sell the rights to collect the document. Anyway, so what did our Mishnah say? Did our Mishnah say, you rip up the ksuva? No. The Mishnah said, you write a receipt. Yeah. So Gemara thinks now we have a proof to the opinion that when you borrow money and you pay back, that all the lender has to do is write your receipt and he doesn't have to give it back. It would seem to be a proof to that argument. You see what the logic over there is? Now, it's all, I'm going to read this all now inside. I already explained it all to you. Shma mina. We hear from this Mishnah, it says that we rip, that we write a, what do you call it? The receipt. You learn from this that regarding the machlokas of lending money, shma mina, that kosvim shover, that the creditors can write a receipt instead of returning the original document. And all the notes below is a whole machlokas, blah, 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 that I already explained all to you. So it seems as a proof is all the creditor has to do is write a receipt. So Abaye wants to say, not necessarily. Because Abaye says we should read and understand the Mishnah. The wording the Mishnah you're going to see now was very not so straight. And Abaye's going to say, no, we can interpret the Mishnah to mean something else. Amar Abaye. Abaye says, when you read the Mishnah a little bit different. Tani, you should read it, instead of writing a receipt, Tani, the Mishnah, should be read as Mikaresh, rips up the Ksuva. That's how you read the Mishnah. Rips up the Ksuva. Now, the wording of the Mishnah was a very bit challenging. I'm trying to see if I can quickly find, I don't want to, problem with this thing. Oh, so let's go up to the Mishnah for 1 second. We'd have to go back. That's what I didn't want to do, but I got to do it. Let me get you the exact wording. 1 second. Give me 1 second. Here it is. If she says, Tmeya ani, look at the exact wording of the Mishnah. It's very, the words are not straight. It says, Shoveres ksuvaso. Viyotsas, and she goes out. Now, what is the word shoveres? Don't look at the English translation, because it's giving you one way to look at it. What does the word shoveres mean?
Right.
Simple means shoveres, to break.
Yeah.
And then, ksuvasa, you break her ksuva. That's one way to read it. I mean, you break her, you rip it up. But that's not an English translation. But the word shoveres also means a receipt. That's because what does a receipt really do? It's proof that the loan is broken. So in other words, the word shoveres can go two ways. It can be used as a verb. Shoveres, you break. Or shoveres means a receipt. Now, neither translation fits perfectly with the next word. If you put the two words together, neither way is it perfect Hebrew language. Now, ksuvasa. Ksuvasa can mean a kasuva. Or it could mean for the ksuva. So we could read it like this. Shoferes ksuvasa. She rips her ksuva. Which really it's a pretty good way of understanding. Although, really, what would be the better word? The better word would be koras. Koras really means to rip. Shoveris means you break it.
Yeah.
So, in other words, the better word should have been you rip. Koras. You rip it. It says shoveris, you break it. Or you could say shoveris, a shoveris, and you're missing the verb here. Shoveris, a credit note, and they have to slip in the middle, is written ksuvasa for her ksuva. Either way, you can't read the Mishnah straight with the two words without pushing something in the middle to make understanding. You follow? So Gemara, when they asked the question, thought it were as shoveris. She writes a receipt, insert for ksuvasa for her ksuva. And that's why they asked the question. So you write a receipt. You don't have, it has to be the same thing by a loan. Abai says, who says that's what those two words means? It means shoveris. Maybe it means shoveris, you break. And shoveris should be understood as karas. You rip up the ksuva. Learn it like that. Learn what that means. She rips up the ksuva. So therefore, it's no proof. Now I got to go back and find the place again. It's right at the bottom. So back to here. Amale Rava. So Rava says, I'm going back and say, I'm sorry, that was Abai. Let's go back to Abai. Amar Abai, Abai says, don't say it's a proof. Ela toni mikaras. So instead, read it, she tears up. And therefore, it fits into the opinion that you don't give a receipt to a regular loan. Which Rava says, yeah, but that's, you know, you can't do that. Amar Le Rava says, that's a nice way of trying to get out of it. But the Mishnah writes, vaha shoveres ktani. It says the word shoveres. Shoveres is more likely to mean you write a receipt. Okay, so Rava said, okay, I'll, if this is what Rava said, well, no, I disagree. It's shover. Shoveris means a receipt. Where's the word is written? He could have come back and just said, okay, shoveris means receipt. Where does, what is shoveris ksuvasha? A receipt, a ksu. Where's the word she writes? So either way, you got to kvetch in a little bit of language. But anyway, Rava backs off and says, I'll tell you what, I get another way to get out of this issue. Elama Rava. Rava says, you know what? This Mishnah is speaking about a certain situation. Now, there's different minhagim in different places, different customs at the times of the Gemara. Not now, but at the times of the Gemara. Times of the Gemara, certain locales, when the man got married, well, let's put it like this. The rabbis always said that a man's got to have, the woman's got a right to collect a ksuva's worth of money when the husband dies or divorces her. Everybody agrees the rabbis instituted that, and that has to be, and it's hinted to in the Torah. There's a debate, though, of custom, different customs. Some had the custom, they actually wrote the ksuva document. Others said, you don't write the ksuva document at all. It's just understood. It's understood that when a man dies, why bother writing ksuvas? There's a standard fare, and that's what she, and that's the husband has to pay up. We save on all the fees. You know, just like every 4 years you got to get your license renewed, you know, it's just a cash cow. That's all it is. We can make a new rule. Once you get it once, it's, you don't have to do it again ever. Finished. Saves a lot of paperwork, but the government wants to make money, wants to employ people, fine, good. Anyway, but listen, if every man has to give a ksuva, why bother writing a ksuva? So there were different, everyone agrees he's got to pay a ksuva. But who says you got to put it on paper? Let's say in a whole city, the custom is nobody writes a ksuva, but of course a man's obliged. So if a man ever divorces the wife, yeah, go pay the ksuva. It's an understood payment that has to happen. So in that case, now listen, and other locales were different. Other locales, no, every man writes a ksuva, the woman holds the ksuva. All right? It makes a big difference. In certain locales, the onus was on the woman to hold on to the ksuva. If she would lose the ksuva, maybe in certain locales, the women were not so careful with things, let's say. Certain locale, there was lots of fiscal pressures, and women had pressures, and people were poor, didn't have safety deposit boxes. You know what? We're going to drink a couple of the women, they're going to lose it. Nobody writes a ksuva. Finished. And it's just automatic. Husband dies. Husband divorces. You pay a ksuva. Other place said, no. You know, a woman has to be responsible, hold on to the ksuva. She goes waving in front of the husband, you know, reminding, you know, and things like that. And women are responsible. Anyway, there are different customs. Not one was right, one is wrong. Different customs. So Rava will say that this Mishnah was written according to the place where the custom was. You don't write a ksuva. Now, if you don't write a ksuva, how will the husband have any proof that he doesn't have to pay the ksuva? She has to write a receipt. That's what I have to receive. When we talk about loans, you always, whenever you lend money to somebody, you always write you owe me, or you're an idiot. Because I have no way of proving it. Marriage, if the custom is, you don't have to prove anything. Because in that place, everybody who gets married gets a ksuba, regardless if it's written or not. So therefore, Rava says, the Mishnah, I will understand the Mishnah say, but makom shein kosvin ksuva skin. We're speaking of a place where they do not write a ksuba. Since no ksuva exists, the divorced woman normally collects when she produces her get. And according to all opinions, the husband has no choice but to accept her receipt. In other words, she does pursue her get, right? The husband has to give a get. All she has to do in those places is, here, see the get? My husband divorced me. Give me the money. Where's the ksuba? I don't have to have a ksuba. The customer does not have a ksuba. So now how's the husband going to get out of having to pay her? Not the only solution is, you have to give her a receipt. So therefore, no proof from that Mishnah. That's all we're saying. From this
Mishnah. She has to give the husband a receipt.
The machlokas is, Rava will say, because we're speaking in a place where a ksuba is never written.
Right.
But if a ksuba was written, then he'd say she wouldn't give him a receipt, they would rip up the ksuba. Right. The other opinion says no, that even if it was a place that had a custom to write a ksuba, he still gives a receipt, and that's the machlokas if you do that or not. Okay, next part of the Mishnah says, okay, what if, on the other hand, at this book, in the first stage, early stages, do you admit or not? She admits, finish your out. Well, he said, no, I say I'm innocent. The Mishnah continues, V'imamra tahorani, if she says I am pure. So what do? Now, ma'alino, so we raise her up, we take her up, l'shari mizrach, to the eastern gate of the Temple Mount, which was opposite the Nicanor gate. The Nicanor gate was by the eastern gate, was out. We take her up there. In other words, it's the Mishnah, just repeating those words. We're going to now analyze it. We always take that little line, and now we analyze it. So in other words, you're going up in elevation. You're going up Temple Mount. Going up. We raise her up. The Gemara says, wait, what do you mean going up? Malinoso? They take her up? She has to go upwards in elevation? Hasam Kaima. Why, she's already standing there. Because where was she standing? Where did we take originally? To the Sanhedrin.
Yeah.
So where was the Sanhedrin? Sanhedrin is right next to the Nicanor gate. So what do you mean you take her up to the Nicanor gate? The Sanhedrin was by there. We already said she goes to the Sanhedrin to intimidate her, etc., etc. So let's just look at this. And the Sanhedrin was in the Lishkas HaGoshes, the chamber of hewn stones. Right? Which is built into the wall of the temple courtyard. It's partly within the consecrated courtyard area, partly outside, etc., etc. Since the Sotah was already at the Sanhedrin's quarters on top of the Temple Mount, why does the Mishnah say they took her up to the eastern gate, which is really at the bottom of the Temple Mount? So what's going on over there? The eastern gate was at the bottom of the Temple Mount. What does it mean they take her up? It means to say the more explains like this. The Maskinan law, that we take her up, umachtinana, and take her down. Why? Kedei le'iguya, in order to exhaust her. So that's what it's saying. It's saying she goes up and down, up and down. She's there. We take her up, we take her down. In other words, we take her down, we take her up, up and down, up and down. Sometimes just wearing a person down, if they're really a liar, will wear down their resistance. And that's what they're saying. Perhaps the hardship and mistreatment will awaken her in an anxiety about the potential effects of bitter waters. So if she is indeed guilty, she will confess. Sooner the Gemara should have said that we take her down and up rather than up and down. But anyway, it's a whole process. Now, how do you know this? Because we see this not just done by this woman. This is done in very neutral cases where we're afraid that people might lie and we're trying to dissuade them from lying. How do you see this? The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, says, now, let's talk about just two witnesses in any case in Jewish law of a capital offense. Let's say a guy is brought to the Bezin, they say he murdered somebody. Okay, two witnesses come, we testify, we saw he murdered this and that. You think it's just so simple, they say you testify goodbye and done? Of First of all, they tell them how important it is that you can't swear falsely, blah, 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 all these things. So we want to scare these guys. What are you trying to say? Because their word will kill somebody. So we want to make sure they're absolutely sure that, I think so, maybe, you know. No. You got to realize. So what part of the process for regular witness, a good Samaritan, we wear him down also. We make drain him a cup also. Because in case he's lying, that will wear his resistance down as well. And that's what it says. Bezdin masin eso eidim makom makom. The Bezdin will move the witnesses from place to place. As the notes say, they begin the examination in one chamber, then move the witnesses to another part of the chamber, and then to a different chamber altogether before completing their questioning. Why do they do that? Same thing. Kidei shetitrav daitan alem. So that their mind should become unsettled. V'yachzruem, and they should do tshuva. Same idea. In other words, wherever we're afraid that a person may lie, just making life unsettled for them is a way to get more of the truth, should there be lying. You say, well, why should these guys suffer? All they're doing is following the law. I mean, remember, the opposite is also true. It's a big sin if you cease testimony and you don't come forth. That's a big sin. It's not like, you know, they get something out of this. You know, being a good Samaritan here, they have to take off time from work and this and that. You imagine it's not so simple. And it's a very, what do you call it, emotional experience. My testimony kills somebody? You know, you could lose a lot of friends that way. So you figure these guys are really being nice people. But the best has to always be concerned, but maybe they're lying. Maybe. You don't want to just kill somebody. So if you're telling the truth, okay, going up and down and up and down, you're willing to suffer a little bit in order to get through. They didn't do anything wrong, but we have to always, you know, nowadays, you know, if you have a witness in a court case, there's always a defense. And what's the defense? So they try to rip up the witnesses. How could you have done that, Mrs. Schwartz? You know, when was the last time you were at the eye doctor, Mrs. Schwartz? Do you have any records of the eye doctor? Maybe it was good. And their mom is giving her a third degree and almost like she's the criminal, right? I'm not saying it's totally right, but you understand where it's coming from. What if Taco didn't see so well? So you can't just, even though you're doing a mitzvah of testifying, still and all, we have to put the person through this treatment. That's the idea. Okay, so now we're at the Shar Nicanor, next line of the Mishnah, Shisham Mashkin Es Asotos, because there we give, by the gate of Nicanor, we give the woman who at the end will have to drink the water, we give it to them, and then they mention a bunch of, then parenthetically, the Mishnah names a number of other things that happen at the Shar Nicanor, as the war will now continue. If you look in, look in the brackets. Yeah. The bracket says, and there they purify a woman who have given birth and the mitzvah. If a woman gives birth to a baby, she's tameh, she has to go to the Beis HaMikdash too, bring a korban, and she becomes purified, she goes to the mikvah, she has to go to Shar Nicanor also, same spot, for good reasons. Or if a person's a Metzora, to be purified, it also goes to the Shar Nicanor. So these three people... No. Just the Sota drinks the bitter water. We're only mentioning the place. What happens at the Shar Nicanor? Number one, a Sota is brought there and she will drink the bitter waters. A whole different story. A woman who happily married to a man gives birth to a baby. She has to bring a korban. So she goes to the Shar Nicanor and she becomes purified. And a Metzora who has to be purified goes to the Shar Nicanor. Only one person drinks the bitter waters. So Gemara says, Bishlema, that's all good and well, I understand. Sotas, a sota goes there because there's textual proof that she does that. Dichsiv, it says, Vehemida Kohen Eso Isha Lifnei Hashem. The Kohen shall stand the woman before Hashem. Now, look at this. The Nicanor gate is considered before Hashem, more so than other places in the Beis HaMikdash. Why? Because the main entrance to the courtyard. So since it was the main entrance to the courtyard, we say it's before Hashem. So very good, you have a proof. And Mitzrayim, and the person was a leper. Also we know he must be in a Shar Nicanor because it uses the same expression of the Torah. Dichsi, v'amid ha-kohen, ha-metaher, etc. The kohen who purifies him, stands him up also, the pasuk goes on, before Hashem. So that's also in a Shar Nicanor. The problem is Elioletus, but what about a woman who gives birth? My timer, what's the reason that her purification takes place at the Nicanor gate? It doesn't really say by her she's placed before Hashem, so why should we put her at the Nicanor gate? We can put it at other gates, like other people who bring other korbanos go to other gates. So if you want to say, it's because the woman who gave birth must come to the temple and stand over her offerings, she has to bring offerings, and the different birds she brings, And we know, Titania, as it says, in Korban or Shalotim Karav, Elim Kain Omed Al Gabov, that a person doesn't bring a Korban unless he's standing over the Korban. In other words, you've got to be next to your Korban, as we learn from very Psukim. And when you're standing near the Korban, when you bring a Korban, look what it says, someone bringing a personal offering would ordinarily enter the courtyard with this offering in order to fulfill his requirement. You'd enter the courtyard. So therefore, a woman who has given birth, however, is forbidden to enter the courtyard proper until after her offerings are made. She may come only as far as the Nicanor gate, which is the innermost point not endowed with the sanctity of the courtyard. So since she has to bring the korban, but she can't go in the courtyard, a regular person whose star goes into the courtyard. So since she can't go there, the Nicanor is the closest to the courtyard, but not yet in the courtyard. Okay, if you want to say that, then you know what? The Mishnah should have mentioned a few other people who go to the Nicanor. Who else is Tomei that can't go into the courtyard but needs to be purified? Ihachi, if so, Zavin v'Zavas Nami. Zavin v'Zavas, these are people who experience certain emissions, similar but not exactly the seminal discharge, or women, certain types of bleeding, that they become Tomei. They should also go to the Nicanor gate to bring a korban. Gemara says, you're right, in Achanami, that's true. There's more, even though the Mishnah only listed three. V'tana Chadet mentioned one example, and Minayanaka, it shows one of them, and Taka, you don't, there's others that also have to go. So all this Gemara proves not only these three people, but a Zav and a Zava also have to do it. Okay, good place to stop.